In order to well, first of all, if you look at our state, and I'm talking about a state constitutional convention.
Right.
I'm not talking about a U.S. constitutional convention.
EEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. We're going to be talking about the Reagan legacy with Greg Palast, one of my favorite investigative journalists. Obviously, he can't do that here because here in this country, we don't really have investigative journalists. We have TV personalities. So in order to get a real investigative journalist, we have to go to the UK. So we'll be talking with Greg Palast about the Reagan legacy and maybe a couple other things. And also Jerry Kaufman, a gentleman who was getting adult basic, I think still is getting the adult basic health care that Governor Corbett wants to destroy. We're going to hear his story, how he got to where he is, why, and maybe talk about some solutions on how do we get around this. As we have a governor, like many of the Republican T-Twizzler governors around the country, wanting to kick poor people down the curb, wanting to balance their budgets on the backs of those least able to afford. We've got to stop our governor from doing the same thing. So those will be interesting conversation. Of course, your calls, 1-888-520-1-888-520-7425. So yesterday was the 100th birthday of Ronald Reagan, and you got to give him credit, and I have to be honest, conservatives are loyal, even in the face of reality, in the face of facts, they're still loyal to this image, to this icon, to this theological figure, if you will, this thing that they've made up, devoid of any facts. You can't talk about facts with him because it's all this, they've made him a deity. They've canonized this man, but I gotta be honest, I lived through the 80s. I was aware of what was going on. So I kind of have a memory of what exactly did happen, not this idealized version of what we wish would have happened. So last week, the conservatives spent all week trying to outdo each other's little remembrance events. You know, they tried to pay homage to the to the king there on his 100th birthday. On Thursday, our Republicans in Senate, they spent the entire day singing his praises from the Senate floor, and the good entrepreneurial Republicans that we have in the RNC and Little Nudie, they tried to make a couple of bucks off the flock, which they didn't. In fact, the RNC, and I'm still thinking about buying them. I'm hoping someone will buy it for me because it just galls me. I'm hoping a Republican who really idolizes Ronald Reagan will buy me a bobblehead. Cause, you know, I just don't want to spend the $25. You know, maybe in a couple of weeks when, after everything, you know, goes down, it'll be on the 50% off rack. Maybe we can get it then. But I just, you know, it just galls me to have to pay $25 for that. But the Reagan we hear about today, honestly, like I said, was not the Reagan of the time that I grew up in. And as time goes by, our memory seems to fade. And we end up believing what people in the RNC and Little Nudie Newt and Grover Norquist, what they've spun for us. And what they've spun in this is this tall tale of this, you know, this Western figure riding in on his horse. You know, kind of like George W. Bush riding in on a horse. Doesn't happen. Isn't reality, but, you know, they got to have it. And I stop and I think about the Reagan that I remember. In this Republican Party today, he would have been mocked. He would have been run right out of out of town on a rail. Or tied up. Saddled backwards and slapped out of town. He wasn't the guy that I just had a conversation with somebody yesterday who is telling me that Reagan was this great tax cutter. He was this great defender of smaller government. He was all these things that he wasn't. And I look at what just happened in this last election. The T Twizzlers over and over and over again. No taxes, smaller government. Pitch them illegals. Pitch them out. That's all they talked about. So I question, would they have had problems with Little Ronnie? Because if you go back and you look at his economic policies, this supply side voodoo Reaganomics, he was a habitual tax raiser. As governor, he signed the largest tax increase in the state's history and doubled its spending. So, major increase, double spending. But somehow we got this view of him as a great defender of the taxpayers. As president, you know, he did kind of the same thing. He raised taxes 7 of the 8 years in office. The first year he cut taxes, oh my God, it's a horrible mess. We're causing a massive unemployment problem. Went back, raised taxes 11 times. So I hear people saying, wow, Ronnie was this great anti-tax zealot. That's just plain false mythology. And that's not me saying this. This is a well-respected historian, Douglas Brinkley. He tripled our deficit. He was, you know, he was a great, he was penny conscious. He kept the budget under control. No, he didn't. You know, I know how much Republicans hate tax and spend liberals. And you know what I hate? Really, you know what I hate? More than a tax and spend liberal? A tax and spend and borrow and steal Republican. That's what I hate. You know how much money this guy borrowed and spent? Took us from under $1 trillion in debt up to over $3 trillion in debt. Not to mention what they stole out of Social Security. When they had their little scheme that went on there. Three times. He borrowed and spent more money than every president in the history of the country, combined. So when he comes into office, he said, well, we're going to cut taxes, and we're going to create jobs. Never happened. And then he went on to raise taxes every chance he got. And in fact, after his great tax cuts of 1981, you saw unemployment skyrocket to almost 11%. So from that point, he's like, now we can hit the pedal, because the folks at the top are doing so much better, the folks at the bottom not so well, and we started to see this gap opening up. Income inequality exploded. And if you remember the tax reform bill of 86, and I go back to this, because to me it really shows the mindset that when people lost their jobs, we began taxing unemployment benefits. They lowered the top marginal rate, raised the bottom rate. So poor people paid more. So again, you know, he is conservative in this way. He balanced his budget on the backs of those least able to afford it. He did put those who were in the worst position, in a worse position, so that the folks at the top could do very well. David Lenhart, the New York Times, said, quote, since 1980, median household income has risen only 30%, that's you and me, adjusted for inflation, while average incomes at the top have tripled or quadrupled. Those are the people way up there, the people who have done very well. That's the Reagan legacy. That, my friends, is the Reagan legacy. That and growing government larger and larger. He doubled the size of government. You look at what he did to Social Security in an attempt to privatize it. Understand, they wanted to privatize it, but they weren't able to do it. You go back and you look at some of the things he closed the state on. He's closed the hospitals, the mental health hospitals, kicking a bunch of veterans to the curb. Homelessness went through the roof. I mean, there is just so much about this guy that just has me completely flipping mad. But yet, all I saw is how wonderful he is. How, he had all these tax cuts and deregulation made the country strong. And we had these liberalized trade policies. We followed neoliberalism and everything was great. Never mind the fact that, and I give him credit, he did use tariffs on Japanese electronic products, 100% tariffs. There were major quotas on things like sugar. The largest steel tariff in the history of the country kind of helped the steel industry, and you got to give him credit for that. But, you know, like a good conservative, Reagan cut funding to cities and gutted the federal housing programs, doubling the number of homeless people, mostly veterans, like I said earlier. He did deregulate. He deregulated the savings and loan industry. And remember how we had to bail that out? How much did that cost us? Not to mention per capita income for the bottom 90% of us fell by a third of a percent. While the folks at the top, that 1%, his cronies, saw their income jump by 55%. And I just look at that and I go, if that weren't bad enough, if that legacy wasn't bad enough, that he screwed the working people of this country, and that's not even taking into account the all-out assault on unionized workers. Nothing to do with that. This is just pure and simple basic economics. He screwed the bottom working class of this country. Well, let's look at some of the things that he gets great praise for. It's foreign policy. Oh, it's foreign policy. He single-handedly, in bare feet, took down the Soviet Union with a butter knife. Single-handedly, with a butter knife, 4 feet of snow, uphill, both ways, took down the Soviet Union. When the reality is, you look at his foreign policies. We were funneling weapons to Iran to fight the Iraqis. We were funding Iraq to fight the Iranians. We were funneling arms, illegal arms. Understand that, illegal arms to the Contras. And yet, we never hear that. Stop and think about Saddam Hussein. Who propped him up? Who pushed him? Who kept him in power? Reagan did. You think about the Taliban. Who helped the Taliban? Who helped the Mujahideen? Who helped Osama bin Laden? Reagan did. Let's not talk about the apartheid in South Africa, that he vetoed a bill, in fact, called them a strategic ally. That's his foreign policy. And we could get into tons of stuff. You go to his social policy. He ran on, we're going to overturn Roe versus Wade. Didn't happen. Use the religious right as useful idiots. Wouldn't say the word AIDS till his second term. Nearly 30,000 people had already died before the word came off of his lips. And then there's that immigration thing. If you remember, he gave amnesty to 3 million undocumented immigrants. How would the T-Twizzlers have liked that? Not to mention, don't forget about his arms deals. He wanted a nuclear-free world. And let's not forget the corruption. The widespread, long-term, oh my God, corruption. Up until the Bush administration, this last Bush administration, they had more people under indictment than any time in the history of the country. So what is so great about the guy? And you listen to the right, and all you hear is how wonderful he is. In fact, a caller called Limbaugh, and I hate to bring it up, but it's this just blatant ignorance. Listen to old Rushy here.
where did you get this silly notion that Reagan raised taxes on Social Security?
Where did I get the silly notion? Well, could it be the Social Security Administration? Gee, I don't know. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Greg Palast, gregpalast.com. We're right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. A study released in Michigan on Thursday shows that Michigan state workers make nearly 7% less in pay and benefits annually than workers in the private sector. The study from Rutgers University contradicts a guide released by Michigan Governor Rick Snyder that suggested state workers earn twice as much as those in the private sector. The jobless recovery continues as labor and the Chamber of Commerce call for infrastructure projects to create jobs. Doug Cunningham has more.
Just 36,000 jobs were created in January, woefully inadequate to pull nearly 14 million jobless American workers out of the claws of the Great Recession. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the jobs report, quote, underlines the absolute necessity of President Obama's plan to invest now in infrastructure, education, and innovation to build our future and create good jobs, end quote. And surprisingly enough, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce agrees. The Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO have joined together in support of President Obama's plan to invest in America and create jobs. Labor and business are working together to get their respective lobbyists on the same page to convince lawmakers from both parties to back the president's jobs creation through infrastructure investment plan. Jobs creation needs to be sustained at more than 200,000 a month to start to bring back the jobs Americans really need to recover from the recession. The president's infrastructure investment plan also has support from former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
A last-minute agreement between teachers and the school district in National City, California, narrowly averted a strike. Negotiations went on for 18 hours straight, and came up with a tentative deal that left the two sides comfortable enough to open schools on Friday. There had been an impasse over contract negotiations since early 2010. The agreement came with compromises from both the district and the teachers' union. Class sizes will be set at 22 students in K through 3rd and 33 students in 4th through 6th. Furlough days was one of the bigger sticking points for the union, as they essentially amount to a pay cut. In the end, the union accepted 4 furlough days, but the contract leaves room, so if education funding increases, those furlough days could be eliminated and class sizes could be further reduced. The National City Elementary Teachers Association announced at 2:33 a.m. on Friday that an agreement had been reached and teachers would be reporting for work. After the teachers' contract expired in June of last year, the district imposed 6 furlough days on the teachers in an attempt to bridge a $3 million budget deficit. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by Ulico and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
Well, you know, that's kind of the thing there. You know, I look at the Reagan years, and I remember them vividly, Jake. The number one thing that sticks out of my mind is when all those job losses were happening, and all those factories were closing down and being moved overseas because we were following the neoliberal trade policies and allowing big businesses to go wherever they want and in search of cheap labor so we could compete with the Japanese. I remember him taxing unemployment benefits. And to me, I just thought this was the biggest slap in the face?
I remember those years. I remember actually registering people at the unemployment offices. I mean, they were just packed. We're talking about 1982. First and foremost, when you think of Reagan, you think of the Patco strike. I mean, he challenged labor, and we didn't answer the call, and it's been downhill ever since. Once he won that strike, the message was loud and clear. It's open season on unions. Another thing I remember, and you touched on it, you called it something different, but it indeed was a war on the poor. There was no question about it. And maybe the worst thing he did was release all those veterans out into the public that needed psychological help. And to this day, the largest segment of homeless in our country come from veterans. So, you know, you're right about Reagan. I mean, they put him up as this deity. I mean, the last week it's just been almost, you know, idol worship.
I mean, he's almost right there with Elvis. Well, he's almost right there with Elvis. Now, I don't think anybody's going to ever outdo Elvis. I don't think you're going to outdo Elvis. The reality is, you know, they're slapping his face all over everything they can. They're trying to make as big a buck as they can off of him. Well, and really tell us things that aren't true.
One thing that really does gall me a little bit, I mean, yes, he was part of it. This thing about, well, he single-handedly destroyed the communist nation, Soviet Union. I mean, that's just nonsense.
You know, never mind
what
Kennedy did. Never mind what
the first day after World War.
Never mind what we've done for the entire Cold. All that's wiped aside. It was one guy single-handedly with a butter knife marching up the hill.
The first day after World War II, we entered into the Cold War. That's the truth. And every president, and maybe it's just to some people, it's the conservative liberal thing. You're right, Harry Truman, John Kennedy. John Kennedy was virulently anti-union. All those presidents anti-communist. I said anti-union, anti-communist. All those presidents fought the Soviet Union. And in the end, it was an arms race, but it was also who had the stronger economy, and they lost. It's that simple. And yes, Ronald Reagan was part of it, but to say that he was, without him, it wouldn't have happened, that's just nonsense. It's just pure nonsense.
But, you know, it makes a nice story, doesn't it? I mean, it does. It makes for a very nice story. And that story of, oh, you know, he was this great communicator. And yeah, he memorized his lines well. Did a very nice job of that. But again, I go back to that whole, and I remember as a kid, I remember the run up to the 1980 election where George H.W. Bush won the Iowa caucus, calling his economic policies exactly what they were, voodoo economics. It was just a shell game. You want to talk about redistribution of wealth? There it was. Wealth coming from you and me, to them, to his people. You know, what was interesting, and, you know, I go back to what I talked about last week, which was this idea that, once Reagan started making a decent amount of money, and he made a big amount of money as a B actor, that's when he decided he was going to flip from a New Deal Democrat to an ultra arch conservative because he didn't want to pay taxes. You know, when it was okay when he was collecting the benefit, but he didn't want to pay for it. It was okay when he saw it helping all the people around him rise up, but he didn't want to be the one paying for it. It's kind of interesting. It really is. And it speaks to his character when he says things like, and this is, you know, not, this is his, one of his chiefs of staff saying, he never did more than two movies in a year because he didn't want to pay taxes. Even if that third movie was gone to the wind, to me that talks of a poor work ethic. I mean, because if you're doing something you love and you're doing something that you want to do, why in God's name would a small amount of tax stop you from doing that?
And then to seal the deal, when he met Nancy, Nancy came from privilege. And he started running in the circles of the privileged and the wealthy, and that sealed the deal for him.
Yeah. Seems like we're having a difficult time getting a hold of Greg Palast So I guess we'll move along with their 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmitho.com. You know, again, I go back to this, and I think it's important. You know, everybody tried to get their little piece of Reagan and try and prop themselves up. But I look back to this last election, and I wonder, you know, how many Tea Party people would be in favor of a guy who raised taxes 11 times? And I give him credit for doing that. He screwed up the first time. He sent the economy into a tailspin in this ridiculous notion that, well, you know, Reagan cut taxes and revenues went up. No, it didn't. And no one's been able to prove that. We've had a whole bunch of hijinks and a whole bunch of, oh, well, if you look at it just this certain way, you know, maybe on the third Tuesday of the second month of the third year, it sometimes looked this way. But the reality is, folks, it ain't true. But they keep repeating it over and over and over. And it's what they're good at. They memorize their lines. And I guess, you know, this is the brilliance of the great communicator. This is the brilliance of Ronald Reagan. The fact that he memorizes a line and he can regurgitate it on cue. And often, and often, and often, and often. And I go, maybe that truly is the brilliance. The ability to, on command, regurgitate a falsehood without thought, without fact, without knowledge, but with a clean heart, a clear mind, and a puffed out chest, which seems to be the conservative way. You know, don't bore me with all those facts. Don't bother me with all that information. I believe. And that's what it comes down to, man. It's I believe. I believe he was a good man. Never mind what the facts show. Never mind the facts show that, and even Ollie North himself said, Reagan knew about the arms for hostages. He knew about it. Never mind the common sense that comes from, are you kidding me? The second he puts his hand on the Bible, they all of a sudden release the hostages? Really? And we bought that. I remember thinking, what hocus pocus? And to be honest, I got to be completely honest, I was not as ideologically firm in my beliefs as I am now. I was just a kid. But even as a young kid, looking at this going, really? I'm not buying it. You know, I'm 13, 14. I know better. I know the three-card Monty game. I know the house always wins. I know a street con when I see it. And that was a street con. And you go back through all of the things. Ketchup is a vegetable. You know, I benefited from the Johnson Great Society programs, the school lunch programs. Mm-hmm. You're going to tell me that hot meal once a day was going to break the bank? But that's what they did. They cut their budgets. They profited off of those who could least afford it. And we're going to see that again. We're seeing it right now. And later on in the program, we'll talk about Rick Perry in Texas and Rick Scott over there in Florida, how they're doing exactly that. And I think this guy here, I think Tom Corbett's going to do the same thing. Going to do everything they can possibly do to balance their budgets on those who are voiceless. Because the people at the bottom, they're used to getting kicked. They're used to being poor. They're not going to stand up for themselves. But the question I ask you, and we're going to take a break here in a minute, the question I ask you is the same question that my government teacher asked me back in 12th grade. Who are you closer to? Are you closer to the guy living in the mansion on the hill or to that person living in poverty? Because you in the middle, you have to decide who you want to pay for. Because you will pay. Because you are where the money is. So who do we want to make? Well, do we want to make fat and happy those at the top, or do we want to help those at the bottom? Because you know what? That could be us down there. Could be us down there. We're going to take a quick break. Your call is 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Smith Show.
Until now, Charles and David Koch have kept their extensive political operation a secret from the media and us hoi polloi. Over the years, they have quietly funneled tens of millions of dollars from their industrial fortune into hundreds of right-wing front groups set up to advance their goal of establishing a corporate plutocracy in America. From behind their plush curtain, they've operated as the right-wing's Wizard of Oz, only Ozier. But now, the curtain is being pulled back, and there they are, buck naked and butt ugly, for all to see. What an unpleasant surprise it must have been for the billionaire brothers to find the hoi polloi peering at them on January 30th. They were sequestered behind the gated walls of a Southern California resort with about 200 other wealthy elites. All had come to this lair of luxury for a closed-door four-day political retreat that Charles periodically organizes to plot strategy with his peers and get money commitments for the next national election. These clandestine powwows allow the Kochs and their corporate cohorts to huddle privately with top GOP Congress critters, Supreme Court justices, political operatives, and such right-wing celebrities as Glenn Beck. This year, however, the confidential letter of invitation from Koch Industries was leaked to researcher Lee Fong at the Center for American Progress and widely distributed. In it, Charles bragged that, quote, "We will assemble an exceptional group of leaders at Rancho Las Palmas Resort." And he did, but not the kind of leaders he intended to bring together. Instead, some 1,500 grassroots Americans gathered at the resort to greet the elites. They were not pleased to see us, but hey, we're not pleased to see them undermining our people's democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, these uninvited guests, accompanied by national media and hordes of bloggers, succeeded in uncloaking the Kochs. And now, the Koch name is a four-letter word, as in, to Koch democracy. Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.com.
Radio of, for, and by, we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Conservative honeymooners, heads up. This is for you. Might as well exploit you while they're at it. In honor of the 100th birthday of Ronald Reagan, the Mission Inn in Riverside, California is now offering to you this one-time, very special, one-time exclusive offer of the Reagan Honeymoon Package. That's right, once-in-a-lifetime exclusive opportunity for you, the newlywed, to stay in the very same room that President Ronald Reagan and First Lady Nancy Reagan spent their very first married night back in 1952. In fact, they still have not changed the sheets. All of that, you know, dinner, massages, passes to the Reagan Library. I know how much honeymooners love to go to the library. So for all that for $1,199. Oh, boy. The Reagan Library, that's where I want to go on my honeymoon. Yeah. Very, very nice. I mean, come on. Well, you know, hey, any gimmick to get people in the door, I guess. According to the Politico, the Democratic Leadership Council is about to fold. Turns out the Clinton era DLC is out of money and could close its doors as early as next week, according to a person who's familiar with the situation. You remember the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, they were kind of that, you know, that weird middle. They tried to be the corporate Democrats. In fact, they were the corporate Democrats. They brought in a whole bunch of money, and you got to give Clinton credit. All that corporate money did for a short period of time save the Democratic Party, also sold the soul of the Democratic Party, but it did bring a little bit of money into his coffers, got him elected president. And now, fortunately, because I am not a big DLC fan, never have been, they appear to be closing. According to their tax, a decline in their budget from $2.6 million down to $1.5 million. And, well, how can you possibly run any decent think tank on anything less than $1.5 million? That shows that they only have 4 staff people left. And most of the staff and all most of the stuff is going over to the Progressive Policy Institute, which has been the DLC's kind of little think tank. So their employment has gone up, so goodbye, DLC. And I got to be honest with you, no tears here.
The 90s were, some people have fond memories, but little thing called NAFTA, little thing called deregulation has hurt so many people.
Deregulation has been the mantra of the corporatists from the late 60s. I mean, you go back and you know, Jimmy Carter had done some deregulation that I'm not happy with as well. So it comes down to, you know, whose interests are being served. And that's been my position all along. I really don't care what party you belong to, as long as the working class interests are served. I have yet to find a Republican. I'm still looking. So if you're out there, please let me know. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I would love to find a working class hero who is also a Republican. Most of the Republicans I find are very corporate minded. You look at these bozos we got here in Harrisburg. Their first thoughts, the privatization, privatize everything because big business needs to make money. And we're going to be talking about that from now until the next election, because they want to privatize schools, they want to privatize the wine and spirit shops, they want to privatize our roads and bridges, they want to privatize our transportation bills, they want to privatize everything. Nothing belongs in the hands of the public, according to them. But I've got a problem with that, because I'm a shareholder in this state. I pay taxes, just like you do. You should be flipping mad that they want to give away the wine and spirit shops, the state liquor stores, for a song, because that's all we're going to get. We might get a song. We're not going to get a dance, but we might get a song, because it sure as heck isn't going to be $2 billion. We had Senator Fulmer on the program. He said, it's his thoughts as well, that we're not even going to see a billion. I'd say we're lucky to get $500 million. We seasonally adjusted annual rate of $2.41 trillion. According to a report today by the Federal Reserve, the third straight monthly gain. So it's over. It's all over. Borrowing in this category that includes credit cards rose 3.5%, the first time since August of 2008. So there was August of 2008, and then something happened in September of 2008. What was that? September 2008. Baseball. No, it had nothing to do with baseball. We had a major economic collapse on Bush's watch brought on by policies passed by Republicans. Yeah, I remember that. Sure. And, of course, Clinton and a bunch of Bentney Democrats. But mostly, you know, Graham Leach Bliley was mostly pushed by Phil Graham, who, to me, you know, for you Saturday Night Live fans, looks a lot like Tippy Turtle. So, you know, kind of a double role there for him. But they're saying, you know what, this is the credit spigot is open, according to Mark Zandi, so there's going to be plenty of spending going on. So that's good. My question is, where are we getting these wage increases to pay for the spending? My question is, and we knew this was going to happen. We knew that eventually Americans would get back on the buying horse. And it appears for the third straight month we have. So my question is where are these wages coming from? Because there's all this talk of inflation. And I was just reading a report today that, they're so afraid that with the food prices and mineral prices and all this stuff going on, that inflation is going to rise. And for me, I say, well, that's not a bad thing for those of us who are in debt, especially people who are putting too much money on their credit cards. A little inflation doesn't hurt. In fact, raises wages up. And since we've had this all-out assault on wages and on inflation since honestly, truthfully, again, I gotta put blame where it started, and that is with Jimmy Carter when he appointed Paul Volcker as head of the Fed, with this all-out assault on inflation. We've seen wages flat, completely flattened out. But borrowing, you may have a credit card. In fact, you may have several. I know people who have 10, 12 cards, Jake. I've got two.
Last numbers I heard were 7, and when I first heard it, I thought, that can't be true. But you know what? Since I've come to realize, that's about right. In fact, I have probably 5 or 6. I don't use a couple of them, but it's so easy, isn't it? It's so easy just to flash that card.
Well, isn't that's the problem? We're so used to whipping out that card that we don't stop and think about, hey, I don't have any money in my pocket. And why don't I have money in my pocket? Oh, that's right. Wages have been stagnant. We've had this mass distribution of wealth from those who work to those who sit by the pool, to those who sit on their yacht and sip margaritas. And look, I'm not against sitting on your yacht drinking margaritas if you can afford it. I've been known to, I shouldn't say that because I really am not a big fan of margaritas, but I've been known to, you know, take on a beverage every now and again. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, relaxing for a day, but here's the thing. I don't want to have to pay for it. I don't. You know, much like some people say, I don't want to pay for, you know, people's pensions. I don't want to pay for the ultra wealthy to sit out and drink margaritas. And what we've done in this country is we have rewarded that kind of behavior and made this massive disincentive to work. So what I'm saying is maybe we need to have a little reexamination of our tax code. Just a little thought thrown out there. Maybe reexamine where the revenue comes from. A little rational thought. I know it's difficult. It has never been done before. So maybe this change in direction could possibly happen.
Well, maybe we need to listen to some of the very, very wealthy. Some of the very wealthy who understand a little bit of economics and who look past the quarterly dividend. Someone like Warren Buffett, and I have great respect for Warren Buffett, who's saying, look, hey, you know, there is a class warfare. And my class is winning, and he's basically saying, how can we justify a system where someone making $30,000-$35,000 a year is paying a higher rate of income tax than the million and billionaires? I mean, at some point, this argument that, well, you know,
class
they
war.
Invested in stocks and bonds, and they stimulated the economy,
war.
Therefore, they should be taxed at a lower rate. You know, it's at some point, the benefit to the nation should be more preeminent than a few more bucks in the pockets of the wealthy.
No. We have a national pride. We, you know, every day I wake up and I get on my knees and I am thankful that we have billionaires in this country. Because other countries don't have billionaires. We're very fortunate. We have billionaires. I'm not sure how it helps me, but it's nice to know that we have them. Don't you take great pride in knowing that we have billionaires? That we've got, you know, people, some of the richest people in the world. Granted, we have a large number of poor people, like in Texas, nearly a quarter of the children now live in poverty. That's not such a pride thing, is it? No. But you know what Texas does have? A lot of billionaires. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We are right back after this.
One place I won't be, I'll be working. As long as my two hands are fit to use. I'll drink my beer in a tavern, sing a little bit of these working men.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
AFSCME, Council 13 members. Did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, it's all right there for your entertainment. You can download it to your iPod or to your MP3 player. Take it with you on the go. Listen to it in the car, whatever you got to do. It is there for you. I don't know if you saw this article in the Sunday paper, but it grabbed me as this is exactly the reason we need Obamacare. It's exactly why we have to have Obamacare. And I got to tell you, I'm going to start using Obamacare as almost a badge of courage, as an honor, if you will, because this is a guy who actually did it. It's 100 years in the making. He was actually able to get it passed and signed and part of the law. So you got to give him credit for that. And I do. Personally, there's a part of me that hopes that the Supreme Court overturns it, throws it out as unconstitutional. So that Obama can then come in and say, well, if that's unconstitutional, I'm just going to open up Medicare to everybody, since that obviously is constitutional, and everybody has Medicare, which is what I want from the beginning. That's not going to happen, mind you, because I want it to. So I caught this article. There's a Newberry Township couple in our listening area who evidently decided that they were so angry about Obamacare. And one of the right-wing nut job talk show hosts had a guest on who got them all worked up, and you know, they got all fired up and said, oh, that's, oh, I don't want to do it. I don't want Obamacare. So they hired this lawyer, this Paul Rossi, because, you know, these folks recognize a power grab when they see one. Understand. And as I'm reading through this, I'm going, the couple that they're talking about, Mr. and Mrs. Bachman. I wonder if there's something crazy about the name Bachman. A whole different story. But this couple, who own a business, a marine business and bait shop or whatever it is, they own a business. So they're not poverty class folks. They have disposable income. They have money. They used to purchase health insurance, but they have chosen not to. They decided, you know what? It's too expensive. Not going to do it. So they're going to go without health care, so they're willing to, out of their pocket, pay for doctor visits, which, you know what, I'm okay with. I think it's a good thing. Here's my problem. Here's my problem with folks who choose not to have health care. Why am I being forced to insure their bet? To me, this is just like the Wall Street thing. This is just like insuring someone's gambling. This is just like the derivatives and the, you know, all of that stuff. I'm being asked as a policyholder, someone who has chosen to have health insurance to cover my family and to make sure that I'm hopefully not going to go bankrupt, and hopefully I'm going to get the care I need when I need it. I'm being responsible for myself, for my family, for my community. Why am I expected to be the insurer of these people who, you know, they get a cold, they'll go to the doctor, pay it out of their pocket. What happens if they have a heart attack? What happens if they get cancer? What happens if they fall out of off their bicycle and break both their knees in the middle of the street? You know, what happens if, you know, he's picking his nose and he pulls out a blood clot? I don't know. Any number of things that could possibly happen. You know, he goes to the bathroom too hard and he pops a hemorrhoid. Who knows? But it's a lot more than they can reach into their pocket and pay for. So then you and I, you and me, the people who are responsible. We're the folks who have to make up for these people. And I look at this and I go, really? These people who had enough money to reach into their pocket and hire an attorney to file a suit in federal court against the president of the United States, but they don't have enough money to buy health insurance? Tell me I'm not misreading this, Jake.
No,
tell
you're
me
not.
I'm not misreading this.
But there's something else which is even more bizarre, because I spent a good deal of time. I actually last night went online and I looked at all the comments in the paper. There were like 70.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were right on. Here's the thing, if you read a little further, you'll discover that their reasoning was, well, we want a new car.
Yeah, I love that.
We want a new car, and if we have to pay for health care every month,
we can't have a new car.
We won't be able to buy a new car. So they're going to take this, hire a lawyer, as you said, take it into court, literally make a federal case out of it, because they want to buy a car.
Understand the new car thing. They had to have something. This is a legal maneuver. So they had to prove that there's something to give them standing. They had to prove loss. They had to prove somehow they were being harmed by this law. They had to prove that it by making them have to purchase health insurance, they were going to lose something. So they couldn't just say, I don't want to pay for it. There had to be some damage. So that is what they chose. Oh, I want a new car. Oh, we need a new car. And for me, I would have said, well, you know, my business needs a new car. You know, we need, you know, to be able to pull boats around or whatever, since they run a boating business. But here's the reality. Premiums, they said, went up to $1,200 a month. Now, why have premiums gone up $1,200 a month? Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that people like this don't have health insurance, and they go to the doctor, and they don't have the money to pay. And we, people who are responsible, the adults in society, the responsible ones, have to pay for them. Now, look, you know, I understand. Look, if you don't have the money, you don't have the money. Somehow we got to get you help. And if what they're saying is true, they only have $450 a month in disposable income, and that's all they could get. I got to be honest with you. If you're buying a car and all you have is $450 a month disposable income, you need to have your heads examined. But that's another story for a whole nother day. These are the exact people, and as I've been thinking this through, these are the exact people this legislation is supposed to help. These two nitwits, they are going to be helped in spite of themselves. That's what drives me nuts. I've got to pay to support people like this, who aren't smart enough to see their hand in front of their face. These are the people who are going to benefit from it. It's just mind-numbing.
And there were a bunch of people who called them some names, and one person said, well, you know, I know these people, and these are fine Christian people. And somebody wrote back, WWCD, what would Christ do? Or what, no, WWG, what would Jesus do? And that's a good question.
Well, here's the thing. If Jesus was here, we wouldn't need health insurance. He just put his hand on you to be healed.
Okay.
That's the end of it. So We now know. He would have just healed you.
I get tired of people hiding behind, well, I'm a good Christian, I have good Christian values. Then why don't you show them in your daily life?
Well, what's so Christian about asking me to pay for you?
There is none.
I mean, I'm missing the point here. What this is to me is a couple of things. First and foremost, when I read the story, I sat there and I thought about, this is a scam. This is them just trying to get a little attention for their boat business, for their marine business. This will get all of the conservatives all tingly in the panties, and they will run to them and give them business. To me, this was a business stunt. Like Imus said that, you know, Anderson Cooper made up being beat up over in Egypt, you know, to get ratings. I'm saying these people did this specifically to get attention so that people would go to their business. I will not be one of them. Because to me, this is angering that they're going to deny people who need the help, who want the help, that they're going to try and deny them of this. It's just, and you know, the other part of this is they want to buy a new car. Are they going to get car insurance when they buy the new car? Because heaven forbid, if you have the new car, you want to keep it new, right? So you're going to insure it. So evidently, in their minds, tell you how childish they must be, it's more important to have a nice new car than to be healthy. And I guess, you know, part of me, and I went through a whole bunch of emotions with this. Part of me says, you know, as a society, maybe we've allowed these people too much latitude. Maybe when they show up to the doctor's office, say, no insurance, can't pay for it. Oh, sorry. There's the curb. Have a seat. And let them die on the street corner. But going back to that whole WWJD thing, it's not in me to allow that to happen. So at the end of the day, this is about personal responsibility. This is about us taking care of ourselves, being adults, and being responsible. And to me, this is a conservative value. It should be. Don't they keep telling us we want people accountable? We want people responsible. This is accountability. This is responsibility, making sure that you cover yourself. Because obviously these people aren't smart enough to do it on their own. Or am I wrong here?
No, you're right. You're right.
1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, we're going to talk with Jerry Kaufman about this adult basic health insurance that's out there to help the low-income workforce. We're right back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Worker Dependent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
A study released in Michigan on Thursday shows that Michigan state workers make nearly 7% less in pay and benefits annually than workers in the private sector. The study from Rutgers University contradicts a guide released by Michigan Governor Rick Snyder that suggested state workers earn twice as much as those in the private sector. The jobless recovery continues as labor and the Chamber of Commerce call for infrastructure projects to create jobs. Doug Cunningham has more.
Just 36,000 jobs were created in January, woefully inadequate to pull nearly 14 million jobless American workers out of the claws of the Great Recession. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the jobs report, quote, underlines the absolute necessity of President Obama's plan to invest now in infrastructure, education, and innovation to build our future and create good jobs, end quote. And surprisingly enough, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce agrees. The Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO have joined together in support of President Obama's plan to invest in America and create jobs. Labor and business are working together to get their respective lobbyists on the same page to convince lawmakers from both parties to back the president's jobs creation through infrastructure investment plan. Jobs creation needs to be sustained at more than 200,000 a month to start to bring back the jobs Americans really need to recover from the recession. The president's infrastructure investment plan also has support from former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
A last-minute agreement between teachers and the school district in National City, California, narrowly averted a strike. Negotiations went on for 18 hours straight and came up with a tentative deal that left the two sides comfortable enough to open schools on Friday. There had been an impasse over contract negotiations since early 2010. The agreement came with compromises from both the district and the teachers' union. Class sizes will be set at 22 students in K through 3rd and 33 students in 4th through 6th. Furlough days was one of the bigger sticking points for the union, as they essentially amount to a pay cut. In the end, the union accepted 4 furlough days, but the contract leaves room, so if education funding increases, those furlough days could be eliminated and class sizes could be further reduced. The National City Elementary Teachers Association announced at 2:33 a.m. on Friday that an agreement had been reached and teachers would be reporting for work. After the teachers' contract expired in June of last year, the district imposed 6 furlough days on the teachers in an attempt to bridge a $3 million budget deficit. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Time for change. It's time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Also, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. You know, we've been talking about this adult basic insurance program. And now, you know, Medicaid is for poor people, for the folks who are at the very bottom. The folks who work for a living, the folks who have some income, who don't meet the stringent requirements of Medicaid, but still, you know, they have something to pay into the system. There's nowhere really for them to go. So the state set up this adult basic. So people pay premiums in, very, very reasonable premiums, for a very modest plan. And for a lot of folks, this is a lifeline, helps keep them alive. We've met several of those people over the last year, and to be honest, you know, I'm looking at what Governor Corbett wants to do, and it's just plain wrong. Premiums go from somewhere like 30, 40 bucks a month, if I'm not mistaken, Jake. What Corbett wants to do is he wants to multiply that by four. These working people can't afford that. So our friends at Healthcare for America, HCAN and the yes. Pennsylvania Healthcare Alliance, you know, they're fighting back. And one of the folks that they sent me is a guy named Jerry Kaufman. Jerry's one of the people who fortunately for him, has been able to get adult basic. Jerry, thanks for taking time for me.
No, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about your background, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, I'm 61 years old. I live here in Erie, and I'm self-employed as a trash hauler, but anymore it's like a part-time job. And I've been on adult basic since July 1st of 2002.
And, you know, could you afford the plan that Corbett's bringing out?
You're speaking of the special care?
Yes.
I checked into that lately, and I've been trying to get some information from, you know, from the insurance companies, and they weren't real, real sure on that, but it's about 4.5 times more. Adult basic's $36 a month, and that would be $162 a month.
Wow.
Now, they call adult basic, it's bare bones insurance. But I was saying the other day when I was down in Harrisburg, if adult basic is bare bones insurance, then they may as well call special care no bones insurance.
Yeah, I mean, because A, you almost can't afford it, and B, what does it cover? From what I understand, no more than 4 doctor appointments
That's
a year?
That's it.
What other restrictions do you know of that they've thrown on this?
Well, I called a lot of my doctors today that I have. I've had some, you know, health issues this past year, and one of the things I know it doesn't cover is like allergies. But it's just not a good plan. A lot of people, including myself, last year I could go to the doctors 4 times in a week, let alone 4 times in a year.
Now, what kind of ailment do you have, Jerry?
I have prostate cancer.
Ooh.
So what? I guess if you don't mind me saying, I guess the two of the words that came to my mind lately was being consumed and overwhelmed. I'm consumed about trying to find insurance that's going to cover my pre-existing condition and. And I haven't really started having any treatments yet, so without insurance, that's not a good thing at all. And I'm overwhelmed at finding out how few companies are going to cover the pre-existing condition.
So if you can't keep adult basic and can't afford the Corbett plan, where will you go?
Well, I'm just still looking. I haven't found anything yet, but the couple of the insurance companies that or the programs that do cover the pre-existing conditions, they're just cost prohibitive, and a lot of these programs you have to wait anywhere from 6 to 12 month period before that coverage is going to kick in. And I'm doing what they call right now, it's called this is a watchful waiting, where my PSA level, my blood level with my prostate is fairly low, but if it shoots way up, I'm going to have to get treatment. And I almost thought about trying to start radiation treatment while I still had adult basic, but if I started and say I was 3 weeks into that, and it's an 8-week program, I would have had to cover the other 5 weeks on my own, and that's over $100,000. So.
Wow. And obviously you couldn't pull that out of your pocket.
No, unless I go up to our local casino and take a chance to win some money.
Yeah, that never works out.
I don't think so.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you know, I had a friend who, you know, honestly and truthfully, they got sick, ended up having to quit his job to go on welfare and collect Medicaid. Is that a possibility?
No, and I would you mind if I just read a couple of things here that I had written down?
Yeah, please do.
I because I just, you know, this is coming from me, but I just wanted to read this so I don't forget what I was saying here. And I just want to mention that I'm not a gambler, and I don't want to be playing the Russian roulette with my life. And I need help, and we all need help. The people, as you mentioned before, there's over 42,000 people, and we are all hardworking, tax-paying citizens, you know, who are on the Dole Basic right now. And it really only takes one catastrophic illness or injury to spend your whole life savings. You know, if you have to go to hospital, you can spend that in a couple of days. And this, to me, it makes sense to help someone when they're down instead of waiting till they're down and out. And that's the way the government wants to work. They want you to just to be destitute before they help you. But if I was on welfare, which I would never go that route, if I was on welfare, I could get all sorts of help. So it just doesn't make any sense to me that I guess I made the mistake of trying to be a responsible person and put a little bit of money away, but I didn't put it away to spend it all in 1 week, you know, in the hospital.
Right. Well, I mean, the sad reality in this is, and we can bash government for this, but it's the people who demand that these programs be set up in such a way that only the truly destitute get them. We haven't looked out for people who, like you, work hard, but just can't afford to pay the premiums or are having trouble finding a job that has health insurance. We haven't done that. And it's something I think we need to look at. And, you know, I look at this adult basic plan, which, as you said, very bare bones. This isn't the Cadillac healthcare plan that our congressmen have. This is something very bare bones, and they want to take that away.
It's just something that really has helped. It was just such a relief, just a really nice feeling to know that I had coverage, and I'm not the type of person that's going to go out of my way to abuse anything. I don't take advantage of a good thing, but it was just nice to know that it was there when I needed it. Now I'm just so overwhelmed, like I said, and just consumed with this. That's all I've been thinking about is what am I going to do? I just can't be without insurance.
Now, what kind of response have you? I know you guys were here for a rally recently. What kind of response have you got from the governor's office?
Well, I myself haven't heard anything.
Have you attempted to contact them at all?
I did call Representative DeLuca. He was one of the gentlemen that spoke down there, and he. I'm hoping I get this right, but he did introduce a bill the other day. It was a bill 500, and that would tap into the state CAT fund, and that would provide about $50 million a year until 2014, and I guess that comes from existing state funds that aren't being utilized right now.
Right. Well, I mean, what has to happen is we've got to figure out how to get this program funded long enough, and it seems reasonable to me that you ask people who have the money, and from what I understand right now, the funds are coming from an excess in reserves that Blue Cross is currently holding.
An excess of, I think there's four companies that compose the Blues. And they're around different parts of the state. They have a nonprofit tax exempt status, and they're legally required to fulfill charitable obligations. And that's what they've been doing since 2005. They've been funding 90% of adult basic. And that was, I believe that was called the Community Health Reinvestment Agreement that
right.
Expired on December 2010. But they have a $6 billion surplus of money. And if they were to fund, like they were doing 90%, but if they were to fund the whole program, that would only be 3% of that money every year. It's nothing.
But it means the world to people like you.
And then some. And, you know, there's more than 42,000 people. You may as well talk about the whole country. That's the people, hardworking people who are in this situation. But I believe in Pennsylvania, at least we have a chance here to do something about it.
Yeah. Let's say this goes away. What happens to you tomorrow? What's the worst case scenario for you?
Well, I guess it's that I'll have to start to go into what savings I've saved for all my life, for my 50 years, and start to deplete that. I really don't want to do that, but I may have to do that. But if it's too expensive, I just don't know what to do. I can't not do anything with having this cancer, but I'm confused.
Jeez. Jerry, I appreciate your time. I wish you nothing but the best of luck, and we're going to keep fighting to make sure that they do something with this adult basic.
I appreciate that. Any help is a big help.
I appreciate your time, Jerry.
Thank you.
And best of luck to you, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You know, I look at this, and it's what's angering to me. This is a hardworking guy. This is a guy who, you know, like most of the folks we've met, these aren't people who sit at home. These are people who go to work every day. All they want is a little bit of security.
Well, the people at the Pennsylvania Health Access Network have said that the governor, when he was running for, when he was on the campaign trail, promised that he would extend this for 6 months until such time as they could figure out exactly what to do.
Why all of a sudden, day one in office, we're kicking it to the curb?
A couple other points quickly. There's 42,000 people on it, but there's more than 10 times that waiting to get on it. There's over 440,000 people waiting to get on it. If I can say something about what the governor is offering originally, from what I understand, it's a very poor policy. It limits to four office visits a year. It does very little, if anything, for pre-existing conditions. And according to the gentleman, I heard the figure four times. The numbers he threw out, it was about four and a half times what they originally were paying. I mean, certainly they can do better than that. And he mentioned Blue Cross Blue Shield. Now, you know, I understand that, you know, that's negotiable. But certainly the money is there. And, in fact, Senator Farmer said that. He said the money is there. Now, it's just a matter of having the political will. Yep. But here's the other important thing. Pennsylvania Health Access Network has run into several people who said flat out, you know, these people don't have access to this medicine and this treatment. They're flat out
going
to die.
Yep. And that's where I was going with Mr. Kaufman. I'm saying at the end of the road here, what happens to you? If you don't have health insurance, what happens? You go bankrupt or you die, one or the other. Just not good. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Don't let us get stupid, all right. Just make us be brave, make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Until now, Charles and David Koch have kept their extensive political operation a secret from the media and us hoi polloi. Over the years, they have quietly funneled tens of millions of dollars from their industrial fortune into hundreds of right-wing front groups set up to advance their goal of establishing a corporate plutocracy in America. From behind their plush curtain, they've operated as the right wing's Wizard of Oz, only Ozier. But now, the curtain is being pulled back, and there they are, buck naked and butt ugly, for all to see. What an unpleasant surprise it must have been for the billionaire brothers to find the hoi polloi peering at them on January 30th. They were sequestered behind the gated walls of a Southern California resort with about 200 other wealthy elites. All had come to this lair of luxury for a closed-door, four-day political retreat that Charles periodically organizes to plot strategy with his peers and get money commitments for the next national election. These clandestine powwows allow the Kochs and their corporate cohorts to huddle privately with top GOP Congress critters, Supreme Court justices, political operatives, and such right-wing celebrities as Glenn Beck. This year, however, the confidential letter of invitation from Koch Industries was leaked to researcher Lee Fong at the Center for American Progress and widely distributed. In it, Charles bragged that, quote, "We will assemble an exceptional group of leaders at Rancho Las Palmas Resort." And he did, but not the kind of leaders he intended to bring together. Instead, some 1,500 grassroots Americans gathered at the resort to greet the elites. They were not pleased to see us, but hey, we're not pleased to see them undermining our people's democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, these uninvited guests, accompanied by national media and hordes of bloggers, succeeded in uncloaking the Kochs. And now, the Koch name is a four-letter word, as in, to Koch democracy.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
Call me
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Our quote of the day comes from Christia Friedland. She is a global editor-at-large for Reuters. She says, quote, "In the long run, super elites can only survive in one of two ways, by suppressing dissent or by sharing the wealth. I know which one I prefer," she says, "and I guess which one do you prefer?" I'd prefer a little bit of sharing there. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Dan on line one. How are we doing tonight, Dan?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I cannot complain.
I was just listening to that guy that had cancer, and, you know, it breaks your heart to hear stuff like that, that people are actually going through stuff like that, you know. I mean, people work, you know, 90% of their life, and then next thing you know, stuff like this happens, and, you know, you would think that there'd be something out there that if people have, like, a condition, like, that they find out they have cancer, that, you know, there's some sort of relief for them.
No, in fact, what used to happen before this healthcare law, they would go back into your past, and they would find something that maybe you didn't quite put on your form right, and then they would throw you off their roll so they didn't have to deal with you. It was a practice known as rescission. In fact, they were giving massive bonuses to their workforce who could find something to save the company the hundreds of thousands of dollars it would cost them to treat your cancer. Tell me there's not something wrong with that.
Well, it's kind of funny that you say that. I got hurt here in September, and I've been at my job for 4 years and never had any incidents. And they basically said I had an inguinal hernia. Well, along with that, if you have pain down around the groin area, they claim that it could also be epididymitis, which is an infection. So I went and went to the hospital right from work, and they did a test, and sure enough, there was no bacteria, so there was no infection. So epididymitis was completely cleaned out of it. Well, my company actually has like a provider that does what, like an insurance company, where they'll go down through everything, and instead of giving you your workman's compensation for being off,
they'll fight you.
Yeah, they'll find anything they can to go and deny you. Well, on my denial sheet, there are 6 reasons, and 5 of them have nothing to do with me. They're trying to do this whole thing about this epididymitis. So I was off work for 3 months, and my company pretty much turned their back on me and pretty much said, well, you know, when you can come back to work, that's great. Well, I have 2 kids, a wife, you know, truck payment, a house payment. What do you do? But my thing is, what do you do when you're 58 years old and something happens like this? And then your company turns your back, and you actually do lose everything you work real hard to get.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the sad reality of our society. You know, we've doing this show. I've talked to people who, you know, just one illness, they end up having to file bankruptcy, losing everything. To me, that is not the kind of society I want to live in. I hope you went and got a good lawyer, and you go after them.
Well, actually, I got it off of your show, Ron Calhoun.
Oh, good. Ron's a good guy.
Yeah, he's taking care of me really, really good. But my other thing is, you know, why is it that we got to help every other people in the countries, you know, everywhere else, instead of taking care of our own people? Our own people are hurting really, really bad. I mean, you watch the news and everything like that. Why don't we take care of our own people before we go to other countries and try to take care of people?
Well, you got to understand, Dan, that by going to other countries and taking care of those folks, we're paving the way for our corporate profits. Whenever you hear we're in Afghanistan or Iraq or God knows what country, watching out for our interests, that means corporate America is there and they've got interests that they're profiting off of. That's what that means. So all of this foreign aid that we give to other countries, A, helps, and I'm not against that, but for the most part, it's about opening up those doors for the corporate profits.
Mm-hmm.
Simple. It's that simple. And take a couple of minutes and Google Smedley Butler. He wrote a piece in the 30s called War is a Racket. And he goes through and he says, you know, these are our interests. He went to, you know, countries around the world for the sugar interests, the bank interests. It's an interesting short read. It's about 16 pages long, but I encourage everybody to read Smedley Butler's piece.
Okay.
I appreciate the call, Dan.
All right, thank you.
Thanks so much. Let's go to line two. We got Aaron. How are we doing tonight, Aaron?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm great. What's on your mind?
I was actually calling to talk about Adult Basic. I heard, you know, Jerry talking, and, you know, I just wanted, you brought up how, you know, Corbett, when he was running for governor, that he supported a six-month extension, and that's, I think, pretty outrageous, and we really need to hold his feet to the fire about that. You know, he said he supported a six-month extension. It was in his health care policy paper, and he also made noises about working with the new legislature to come up with longer-term funding solutions. So this is like a complete reversal from what he was talking about, you know, pre-becoming governor.
Yeah, you got to wonder why, though. I mean, because this isn't really a hugely expensive piece of policy. It's not.
Mm-hmm. No, not at all. And it's not tax dollars. You know, like Gary said, 90% of the money comes from the Blues. They have $6 billion in surplus. I mean, it would take 3% of that to fund adult basic for an entire year. It's insane that no one is really putting the pressure on them to do the right thing. I mean, it's not. Obviously, the state is strapped. They don't have the resources to fund adult basic. But, you know, the Blues have a legal obligation. You know, they get $100 million approximately in tax breaks a year. They have legal obligations to do charitable stuff, and they have all this money in reserves. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, Aaron. You know, our budget may be tough, but I don't think we balance it off the backs of those who can least afford it. Folks like Jerry, you know, you hear that story, that could be any one of us at any time. Any of the folks that I know who work awful hard for a living and still can't make ends meet. These kind of programs are lifesavers.
Absolutely, and it's extremely short-sighted. You know, if folks lose their insurance, you know, some of them are certainly going to die. You know, if they can't afford other options and they can't get the care they need, they're going to have to jeopardize their jobs and businesses. If they get so sick they can't work, they're going to be forced to turn to emergency rooms. It drives up costs for everybody. So, I mean, it's just, and like you said, I mean, it's a tiny amount of money compared to, you know, other things, and certainly for the impact that it has. It's a very efficient and effective program in terms of allowing people to maintain some sort of security and quality of life.
And a little dignity. I mean,
yeah.
I you know, again, I go back to this, and, you know, I always put myself in these situations where, what if it were me? What if it were my children? Mm-hmm. What would I want? And I look at this, and I'm just furious at the fact that this guy, who, like you said he was going to give it 6 months at least, has turned his back on that campaign promise, mm-hmm. and now has, and the way it's looking, going to quadruple the rates. That makes mm-hmm. no sense, Aaron.
No, and he's, I mean, this is Corbett. You know, this is, people are going to judge him on this. You know, he needs to make it clear whose side he's on, who he's going to stand with. Is he going to stand with hardworking people, or is he going to stand with big insurance companies that have billions in surplus?
Do you really think people will judge him on this? Do you really think people are going to look to this issue? Because it's a small amount of money. It's a small number of people. Do you think the majority of people in the state are going to take a look at this and care?
I know that just since people have started getting their cancellation notices, I've gotten tons of panic calls from people, and people are starting to finally, you know, that light bulb is starting to come on. You know, like, oh, I didn't really realize that he was talking about this. But, I mean, absolutely, especially for the people and the families that are affected directly by this, it's something that they're not going to forget.
Because I sure hope so. I've been calling for the days when folks who are affected by this stuff start marching in streets and start, you know, clanging pots and pans if they have to, doing anything they can do to get attention.
Yeah. I think, I think especially now it's really when people, they're getting the cancellation notices, they're starting to have, you know, those moments of panic about, like, what am I going to do? And we've gotten tons of calls from people who want to get involved and share their story. And we're actually doing some Valentine's Day actions at core regional offices all around the state on Valentine's Day to deliver you know, messages, Valentine cards, call them out and say, look, this is really on you. You need to step up and make sure that these folks don't lose their health insurance.
If someone wanted to get involved in this issue, what advice would you give them?
I would say go to our website, pahealthaccess.org, or give me a call on my cell phone. It's 412-512-9225. But there's tons of information on our website, emails, phone numbers. But we need to hear from people. We really do. I mean, you make a good point. I mean, they're, you know, the folks, I mean, it's 42,000 people, which is a huge number, but we're a big state, and we need to get, you know, really, you know, generate a huge outcry about this because it's outrageous.
As I understand, there's some 450,000 on the waiting list.
Yeah. Yep. It's huge. I mean, the need is enormous.
Amazing stuff. Aaron, I appreciate the call. Thanks for the information.
Thank you.
You know, you look at this, and it's mind-blowing, Jake.
The money is there. The money is there if there's a will. And right now, I guess the only conclusion we can draw is that the governor has, quote, unquote, more important things to do. But
yeah.
How can that be when people, if he doesn't do his job, people are going
to
die?
Well, what it is, you know, again, you know, he's trying to get that off the state and privatize. You got to understand, this is what they believe. to their core, they believe in privatizing. If it's not health care, if it's not roads and bridges, if it's not education, if it's not the state liquors, wine and spirit shops, they want everything in the hands of for-profit interests. That's their belief. That's their theology. And as a shareholder in this state, that, to me, is wrong-headed. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
The steel strike of 1919 was called the Hunky Strike because most of the workers were either first or second generation immigrants from Eastern and Central Europe. Up until the end of World War I, workers had benefited from shorter hours, better pay, and the promise of union recognition. Once the war came to an end, the mill owners pursued anti-union open shop policies and other cost-cutting measures. During the strike, there was near total suppression of all civil liberties. Major work issues included the 12-hour day, the 7-day work week, scores of workers being injured and maimed, union recognition, and poverty wages. Mary Harris, better known as Mother Jones, fought tirelessly throughout her life for social justice and human rights as a labor leader and a worker advocate. On August 20th, while visiting striking miners in Homestead, Pennsylvania, home of U.S. Steel's famous Homestead Steelworks, she defied injunctions against public gatherings and addressed 5,000 striking workers and their families. This speech led to her being arrested and jailed for giving an unauthorized speech. When brought before the judge, she was asked who had signed her permit to speak at a public gathering. She answered, Patrick Henry, Thomas Jefferson, and John Adams. As the strike went on, Mother Jones, the grandmother of all agitators, gave many speeches to rally the workers. One speech in Chicago was described by a spy for the U.S. War Department's Military Intelligence Division as the foulest and most profane that can be imagined, teeming with ultra-radical suggestions. Welcoming the spies, she would invite them to the front of the crowd so they could report her words accurately. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therickSmithShow.com.
Waving the flag of freedom for people, not corporations. Rick Smith.
Rick, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. Today in tiny T-Town, Eudes, Florida, Governor Rick Scott rolled out his new state budget, and just as he promised and even fantasized about on the campaign trail, there will be deep, drastic, draconian, or as he said, fun and exciting, cuts to social programs while handing corporations the key to the kingdom. Scott, the fraudinator, you may remember Mr. Scott was the head of a health insurance company, got himself caught in a little fraud, about $1.7 billion they paid in fines. There's talk of, you know, about 14 felonies that the company pled guilty to. But like a good corporation, like a good corporate person, they just paid a little fine, did not go to jail. You and I, we go to jail. Anyway, the fraudinator, he's out to make Florida the most fiscally conservative state in the nation, whatever the hell that means. Does it mean that we're going to double the size of government and triple the size of the debt and raise taxes 11 times like Ronald Reagan did? From Florida, I sure hope not. But it appears that his budget is going to slash corporate taxes. And how do we pay for those handouts? How do we pay for all that welfare that we're giving to corporate America? How do we do that? Well, like any good conservative, we're going to steal from the poor. We're going to raid Medicaid, you know, all those services for low-income people. The state budget proposal is going to cut an estimated $5 billion from their budget, along with all of the corporate welfare. He wants to slash property taxes as well. I got to be honest, I'm not a big fan of property taxes. I think that once you own your home, you should own your home, and there should be no way it can be taken from you. That's why I would not be against a way to do away with the property tax, maybe tie it to an income tax, something along those lines. But here's the thing. The corporate welfare is going to be about $700 million. So that means more cuts to social programs. Understand, Florida already has one of the nation's lowest corporate tax rates. They love to say Pennsylvania has the highest corporate tax rate. Highest. Although three-quarters of the companies pay no tax. So I'm not quite sure how that's the highest, since nobody pays it. But currently their corporate tax rate is about 5%. He wants to lower it down to 3.3 and eventually do away with it entirely by 2018. So where is he going to get all this money? Well, he wants to cut in half their Medicaid. And they've got a $20.3 billion Medicaid system in Florida because you got a lot of poor people. So they want to cut in half. Now understand, Medicaid is half paid by the federal government, half paid by the state. So he's going to cut half of that, which would be $10.15 billion. He wants to cut half of that. But this is the part that I just don't understand. And this is the dumb part. If you cut half of what you're spending, the federal government cuts half of what it's spending. So if you're only spending $5 billion because you've cut your 10 in half, the federal government will cut its 10 in half. Now you've only got $10 billion. Where you had a bill of 20, what happens to that other $10 billion? Well, what happens, we know what happens. The poor people suffer. And to me, there's part of me that goes, maybe this is a good thing. Maybe we will see the riots in the streets. Maybe we'll see poor people finally going, hey, we've been getting the screws. Maybe. Understand, and this is one of the things I love about Florida, has one of the most regressive tax systems in the country for poor people. For very wealthy folks, they're okay. Because when LeBron James went down to play in South Florida, he went down partly because almost no taxes. If you're in that top 1%, you pay about 2.5%. If you work for a living, work at McDonald's, flip burgers, you're going to pay about 13.5%. Why? Because it's a skewed backward system. But here again, I look at Scott, and I say, you know, instead of looking for rational, sane ways to enhance revenue, instead of, you know, going after sane things, we're going to cause a lot of pain. And, you know, I guess that's what they want to do. I look at this. He also, and this is the part that just drives me nuts, because we've been hearing all this talk, Jake, about the pension funds. that, oh, we're going to be killed by the pension funds. Florida has a relatively healthy state pension system. They actually made their contributions. Their employees made their contributions. It took a major hit with the Bush recession of 2008, but they're still okay. So what he wants to do, he wants to reform it. Yeah, he wants to reform it by taking $2.8 billion away from it over the next 2 years. I love that reform, because what Republicans use as reform generally means my backside is going to hurt. And this is what's going to happen. I mean, this is a major screw job. This is a major theft from working people up to the very, very wealthy. And what we've got is we've got, you know, Corbett here saying, oh, hey, you know what? We're going to cut $1 billion from education. Isn't that great? And well, then, you know what we're going to do? We're going to create this voucher system. We're going to create this great system, or it's going to cost us probably another $500 million that we're going to take from public education. Where's the outrage? Where are the people marching in the streets saying, save our public education? It's insanity. But yet we're letting these idiots get away with this stuff. You look at the guy in Texas. He's got a budget shortfall that's just mind-blowing, but they won't talk about raising taxes. No, not doing that. And I go back to this whole voucher thing. And I don't know if you read the paper this weekend where they're oh, this is the civil rights issue. It's not a civil rights issue. If it were a civil rights issue, if you really were concerned about that, we would pool all of the resources. We would bring all of the money in, and we would divvy it up evenly amongst every student in the state of Pennsylvania. If you want your vouchers so badly, do that first. Do that first. Pool all the resources, divvy it up amongst all. So the people in Lower Marion who pay $22,000 per student, that gets pooled into the pool. And if you want $22,000 per student, every kid in the state gets $22,000 per student.
And that could work, but politically, you're not going to get it.
No, of course it's not going to work, because you've got, we were so accustomed to pitting each other against one another. We're so Harrisburg against, you know, Camp Hill, and or Philadelphia against Central Pennsylvania. We're so used to pitting ourselves against each other, slicing and dicing ourselves up, that, oh, they might get something we're not getting. You know, you hear this on transportation all the time. Well, you know, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, they get all that transportation money because they've got public transportation. Without thinking that every one of the 67 counties in this state has a public transit system that, oh, I don't know, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are actually paying for. You don't hear that very often, do you? No, because it doesn't fit the no, mean.
You're right. Well, for a second, to get back at his voucher, I mean, how many times have I heard those who champions of the voucher system say, well, you know, it's not really about money. Oh, really? It's not really about money. No. This isn't about money. Well, at the end of the day, it is. Well, you would have a system, and I do believe there are some states that do fund schools like that, Rick, where that every state, every school system gets the same. It can work, but you're not going to get it here. And that, to me, I would prefer to see that before vouchers.
Look, at the end of the day, I've had a number of emails come in. And again, if you want to email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, I do answer all emails personally. But I've been getting a number of emails from folks who agree with me on this. If these vouchers were the answer, the states that have been doing it would be far surpassing us. The truth of the matter is there are no studies, no matter what the tinky tank across the street says, there are no studies that show any significant improvement with vouchers. There's nothing. There's almost no studies that show a success when you go to these charter schools, even though they get to pick and choose who they want. Now, in a number of the emails I've got, folks have said, look, you know, when my kids were in school, we got them into school. We drove them to work. The one guy I was thinking of, he said he got his one son into a very prestigious private school. He drove him a half an hour each way back and forth to school every day. The kid did very well, went on to college, has this great job. A sibling chose to go to public school. National Honor Society, you know, the whole graduating from college, going to get a very good job. Reiterating what I've been saying all along, it's the home. It's that push from, it's that expectation. And a lot of the schools where we're seeing the failure rates, unfortunately, those kids don't have the expectations from home. Now, for me, the answers are not simple, but a smart direction would be increase funding, make the funding shared a little bit better, and increase the amount of hours per day and the amount of days per year. And get away from this sit-and-listen mentality. Have smaller classrooms, have more teacher interaction, more experiential, hands-on learning. If you want a system that's going to educate kids, to me, that's it. You know, you think about after, and remember when, you probably don't remember when you were in school, but most people, you know, they may. That was a shot.
Is that a shot? Yeah, I figured that out.
That was a shot.
Yeah.
Most people remember going back after summer vacation, and they forgot everything they learned the year before.
Mm-hmm.
And you spend the first 3-4 weeks, maybe the first 2 months, relearning everything you learned last year.
No.
I've always said, why have that huge break in the middle? Draw out the year, have a lot of small, a lot of, you know, 3-4 vacation days here and there, but have longer years, longer days, and more hands-on stuff.
Well, the Japanese have been, you know, from an educational standpoint, have just been outperforming us. They go to school on Saturdays. Now, I know there's going to be an outrage from some parents, but do we want a better educational system or don't we?
Well, it's not parents. I don't think parents would be upset. I think the Republicans would be upset. Well, I don't want to babysit your kids. Why should I have to pay for child care? Because that was the argument against full-day kindergarten. And there are studies that show full-day kindergarten is beneficial to kids. There are.
Well,
peer-reviewed studies. The Tinky Tank can't come up with any ones that say it hurts.
There's another thing that maybe you didn't mention, and maybe it's minor, and with some kids I tend to believe it's fairly major, the socialization. The going to school with kids that you know, some of these schools are big. Learning how to deal with, you know, situations involving a large number of kids your age, that's certainly part of the educational process, learning how to handle yourself.
Yep.
All that enters into, in my thinking, that's part of the educational process also.
1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? We're right back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well?
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call them at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Well, there's a job opening. We need an auctioneer here in the state because there's so much up on the auction block. We got a state asset. We got something. We got roads. We got bridges. We got schools. We got liquor stores. We got it all. Rock bottom pricing. I mean, isn't that what we're telling corporate America? Isn't that what our Republicans in the House and Senate here and Corbett are saying? We want vouchers. We want it so we can privatization because that's what that's about. You hear this, oh, we're going to create competition. Explain that to me. We're going to pay to build new schools. We're going to privatize those schools so that all of the students move over to the private schools so that the public schools crumble and fail. And then what's going to happen? We're hearing a lot of in the transportation bill that's circulating. Oh, we need P3s. We need public-private partnerships. So we can sell off our assets. You know, I had a great idea. You want to pave our roads? You want to go through the P3s? Maybe sell out 100 feet of road to corporations so they can put all of their slogans on it. Have a big advertisement right on the road, like road markings. You know, so as you're driving down the road, you can read "Buy at Bob's" or you know "We got the best" or you know whatever. Get your oil here. It might, you know, hey, you know what? It might actually get drivers to put their eyes back on the road. Never know. Hasn't been tried. Just could work. But you look at this whole privatization scheme. And for me, it's insane for one. But if you follow the premise that the Republicans keep trying to ram down our throats, that we have a spending problem, it makes sense. We need to raise revenue somehow. And the quick, easy way, quick, easy fix, the quick needle in the arm, sell off our assets. Quick fix. And what I'm saying is what we need to do is we need to look at some rational cost cutting. Very rational. Not things that are going to be to the bone, not things that are going to put people at the margin, not putting people at the margin in a worse position that's going to end up costing us more down the road. And we need to look at some reasonable revenue increases. Very, 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 very simple stuff. And I looked to the natural gas industry. And I saw an article today in the paper that's touting, from the AP, former Governor Tom Ridge is helping a natural gas industry group unveil what it calls a set of guiding principles representing a commitment to Pennsylvania's communities. Now, Ridge, you know, is an advisor to the Marcellus Shale Coalition. They pay him handsomely. If I remember right, almost $1 million last year.
Yep.
A nice bit of pocket change if you can get it. But he's out there advocating for this. Now, understand this. And according to Larry Michaels from Penn College, he is saying that 70% of the workers directly involved in the drilling are from out of state. So workers in Pennsylvania aren't even benefiting from this. And the tax dollars that goes with them, all of the money that they earn leaves the state. It does nothing for the local economies. Now, they did talk about in the one article, oh, there are a couple of jobs that are ancillary. They're not really having to do with the drilling itself. They're just ancillary jobs that pay pretty well. And good, you know, we should get some of those. But 70% of them, out-of-state workers. And is that good for the state of Pennsylvania? And you look at this Marcellus Shale, all of this wealth that's being created by people outside of the state. It's not benefiting us directly, which is why I say we absolutely need a rational, reasonable revenue increase, which a reasonable revenue increase is putting a severance tax on the Marcellus Shale. we have lost millions and millions of dollars by not having one. And understand, they've already put it into their business plan. They're already charging you, the consumer, for that tax, which is beautiful. So we've just handed them, by our inaction and our failure to tax and our failure to oversee, they're just putting that tax into their pocket instead of into the state. Tell me how rational that is. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I'm curious. Is this how you would run the state? Because it's sure not the way I would. And you look at this guy with his bizarre, hokey, I'm taking the anti-tax pledge. It's insane.
He just announced he's going to cut education by $1 billion.
$1 billion.
That's just about.
That's about every penny that Rendell
raised.
That's
just about what the state coffers lost in the last 2 years for the failure of the state legislature to tax. In excess of $500 million both years we would have lost. There's your $1 billion.
And you look at that and you go, really? You're gonna cut $1 billion from education. You're going to start this hokey, bizarre voucher program that's going to set up another bureaucracy. So much for your smaller government. Since you're setting up another bureaucracy, and it's going to cost the public schools about $500 million there, from some of the estimates that I've seen. So now you're talking about $1.5 billion from education. Who's going to pick that up? Oh, yeah, you are, the property tax people with your school taxes. Make sure you thank Tom for not raising taxes. Make sure you tell Twitter Tom, get on your Twitter and tweet him over. Thank you, Tom. Sure am happy you didn't raise my taxes. I mean, there are other things that he can do. And look, I'll give him a pass if he closes the Delaware loophole. He can keep his pledge. Close the Delaware loophole. It's like me. Stop and think about how insane this practice is. We're going to have people doing business in the state, and we're going to say, well, we're not going to tax you because you set up a P.O. box in Delaware where you don't have to pay us anything. You've trademarked your little figurine, and you're running all the profits through that little dummy corporation that you've set up, and we see all of our tax dollars leave. That would be like me saying, okay, well, you know, I'm going to cook a meal. I'm going to cook a nice big meal, big Thanksgiving feast, and the dog who came in through the cat door ate the feast, and I can't have any of it. It's insane. It's just nonsense. And look, if he raises this tax, I will say that this was something that should have been done under the Rendell years. It was something that should have been done by the previous groups, and that Tom was simply righting a wrong. What do you say? They can't hear you shaking your head.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, see? Simple. You think about cigars and smokeless tobacco. Another insanity. We're one of the only states in the country that don't tax those. And again, you know, it comes down to simple questions. And we're going to have these conversations going forward because the budget is coming out March 8th. I've always believed that budgets are a moral document. It shows where your priorities are. It shows your morality. It shows your values. We're really going to see what his values are. Republicans love to talk about being the values party. We're family values people. The values people. We're going to really see what his values are. We're going to see what priorities he has as we move forward, because if there are significant cuts to health insurance programs like Adult Basic, we will understand. If there are significant cuts of $1 billion to education, we'll understand. And you need to remember this stuff, because the general consensus is he's going to make the next 2 years a living hell in this state. So that in the second 2 years, like any good Stockholm syndrome sufferer, we will then identify with our abuser and we'll thank him for not abusing us as much as he did the previous 2 years. And then somehow he thinks we'll vote for him again. And what I'm saying is you've got to pay attention to all this stuff, because as we start marching down this road of slash and burn, as we start marching down this road of handing over state assets to private for-profit interests, as we continue marching down this road of public-private partnerships where building projects are now going to be sponsored by corporations who've got their hand out seeking A, their money back, and B, more than they gave you because they need profit, we're going to see this stuff work itself out. And I don't think there's anything that the state owns. I don't think there's any service. I don't think there's anything that is not on the chopping block, that is not going to be up for sale. And education is the big prize in this state. You know, the liquor stores are one thing. You know, that's an ideological thing. There isn't an awful lot of money going to be made off of that. It's education. Man, that's the big one. If they can put education in the hands of private profiteers, oh, man, that is going to be a boon. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. A study released in Michigan on Thursday shows that Michigan state workers make nearly 7% less in pay and benefits annually than workers in the private sector. The study from Rutgers University contradicts a guide released by Michigan Governor Rick Snyder that suggested state workers earn twice as much as those in the private sector. The jobless recovery continues as labor and the Chamber of Commerce call for infrastructure projects to create jobs. Doug Cunningham has more.
Just 36,000 jobs were created in January, woefully inadequate to pull nearly 14 million jobless American workers out of the claws of the Great Recession. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says the jobs report, quote, underlines the absolute necessity of President Obama's plan to invest now in infrastructure, education, and innovation to build our future and create good jobs, end quote. And surprisingly enough, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce agrees. The Chamber of Commerce and the AFL-CIO have joined together in support of President Obama's plan to invest in America and create jobs. Labor and business are working together to get their respective lobbyists on the same page to convince lawmakers from both parties to back the president's jobs creation through infrastructure investment plan. Jobs creation needs to be sustained at more than 200,000 a month to start to bring back the jobs Americans really need to recover from the recession. The president's infrastructure investment plan also has support from former California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
A last-minute agreement between teachers and the school district in National City, California, narrowly averted a strike. Negotiations went on for 18 hours straight and came up with a tentative deal that left the two sides comfortable enough to open schools on Friday. There had been an impasse over contract negotiations since early 2010. The agreement came in compromises from both the district and the teachers' union. Class sizes will be set at 22 students in K through 3rd and 33 students in 4th through 6th. Furlough days was one of the bigger sticking points for the union, as they essentially amount to a pay cut. In the end, the union accepted 4 furlough days, but the contract leaves room, so if education funding increases, those furlough days could be eliminated and class sizes could be further reduced. The National City Elementary Teachers Association announced at 2:33 a.m. on Friday that an agreement had been reached and teachers would be reporting for work. After the teachers' contract expired in June of last year, the district imposed 6 furlough days on the teachers in an attempt to bridge a $3 million budget deficit. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting by ULICO and the OPEIU.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
according to analysis of the SIPP data by the Urban Institute, older men who gain reemployment, they're doing it, but at a lower wage. Median hourly wages for reemployed men aged 50 to 61 are 20.1% lower on the new job than the old job, and 35.6% lower on the job for men age 62 and older. So basically, employers know the older you are, the more desperate you'll probably be, and the cheaper they can get away with getting you for, so they don't have to pay you. Well, welcome to America. President Obama addressed the GOP hit squad today, where he reached back to the days of JFK with a call of, ask not what your country's taxpayers can do for your bottom line. Ask what you greedy, self-centered, narcissistic egomaniacs can do to save our nation. Well, that's not really what he said, but he said, as we work with you to make America a better place to do business, ask yourself what you can do for America. Ask yourselves what you can do to hire American workers, to support the American economy, and to invest in the nation. And, you know, as I heard this, we all know what they're going to do. They're going to do nothing. They're going to do nothing at all because they've got us over a barrel. We've bailed them out. We've given them countless numbers of tax breaks, of loopholes, of incentives to flee the country in search of exploitable cheap labor, exploitable environmental regulations. We just said, there's the gate, go. And, oh, by the way, here are a couple of sandwiches for the trip. Don't forget, here's your tax cut. It's insane. It's absolutely insane that we allow these companies to flee the country and bring their products back here tariff-free. Again, another reason why I'm firmly in favor of a VAT tax. I think if you have a value-added adjustment at the border, I think that's a good thing. I think it levels the playing field for everybody. Because understand, all the other countries are doing it, so we're paying them. How do you think that they're protecting their industries? They're the smart ones. We seem to be the ones that just haven't. You said the Super Bowl commercial the other night, and they've been playing it for a while. It's the one cell phone company where the one guy starts laughing. He's got that goofy kind of cackle laugh, and then everyone's sitting there looking at their phones. And about 2 minutes later, they get the joke. That's us. We're the dumb ones in the car. We're the ones with the slow internet. Going well, we do have really slow internet if you look at compared to South Korea and Japan and. Even China, we've got really slow internet. But we're that guy. We're those people in the car. We're the ones who we're not getting the joke. And you look at the room full of people that Obama was talking to today. And Think Progress did a nice job of the research here. Some of the people who were on the U.S. Chamber's Board of Directors, or as I like to call them, the International GOP Hit Squad. You know, the folks who have set up AmChams all over the globe in places like Egypt, in places like China, all around the world, so that, you know, they can ease business interests around the globe. You know, like I was talking to earlier with Dan. You know, whenever you hear, we were just protecting our interests, so we need to give them aid or we need to send the military there. Our interests, business. But again, Think Progress does a nice little bit of research on this, and they talk about some of the people on the board of directors for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. One of the guys, a guy named Daniel Houston, he's the CEO of Navistar. In 2010, he increased his total take by 27% from just over $6.5 million to $8.5 million. So that's a nice bit of change in his pocket, $8.5 million. Now, the company did very well. Great profits, earned $320 million in profit in 2009, 2010, made almost $225 million, about $3.11 a share. So the shareholders are happy. The CEO's lining his pockets. Things are great, except for the workers in Ohio who lost 250 jobs and in Arkansas who lost almost 500 and another 300 at a Navistar plant also in Arkansas. Closed that factory, moved it to Mexico. Did I mention that? Oh, yeah. Moved their plant to Mexico. So, gee, Nice profits for the shareholders, nice profits for the CEO. You working people, sorry. Have a little unemployment, and then we'll deny that of you. Another U.S. board member, if you will, telecom giant AT&T, their CEO, Randall Stephenson, took $20.3 million, got an extra $9 million into his pension plan. Extra $9 million! And he has a sweet, sweet pension plan. He's going to get equal to 60% of his highest average year. So three of the 10 years, he has a 10-year block, the highest 3 years, he's going to get an average of 60% of that. Sweet. Currently, his pension is about $31 million. And I got to ask you, how's your 401k doing? Doing good? AT&T has downloaded, has downsized 16,000 jobs. So CEO profits, nice. Shareholders, really, really well. 16,000 workers, not so good. John Deere, everyone loves the Deere, right? Their CEO also sits on the U.S. Chamber Board of Directors, a guy named Samuel Allen. He took $12.3 million in 2010, tripling what he got in the heist in 2009. As Deere and Company, they had record profits for their shareholders, again, but proving their slogan is wrong. Nothing runs like a Deere, that it's wrong. John Deere ran nearly 1,000 jobs out of Illinois, Ohio, Iowa, and North Dakota. So, hey, good for them. And finally, WellPoint, their CEO also on the U.S. Chamber's Board of Directors. Angela Braly's took a 51% boost from her $8.7 million salary in 2008 up to $13 million. Now, remember, WellPoint shed thousands of jobs, and they spent, somewhere in the neighborhood of, $86 million or portions of to fight Obamacare. So, yeah, they've got your interests in heart. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Got Rick Rich from Anvil on line one. How are we doing tonight?
Hey, Rick. Hey, Rick. Hey, Jake.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah, I agree with you there, Rick, as far as like a value-added tax goes. I think it isn't going to be tax breaks that I want people to put manufacturing jobs in the United States. It's going to be foreign goods are going to have to, it's going to have to cost less to produce in the United States than it was in other countries for people to want to buy our stuff. And the only way to do that is put a fence up and say, hey, we're going to tax the living daylights out of you for goods produced elsewhere. I mean, it's unpopular, but that's the only way I can think of waking these people up. I mean, why would, if a product costs more from China or Japan, they're going to have to buy the one produced in the United States. I mean, as much as they don't, people like taxes, that's the only thing I can think of to stop this. This onslaught of discount labor, there's no way we can compete with. We can't compete with a guy making a dollar a week.
Exactly, and you cannot compete with a tax code that rewards moving jobs overseas, rewards CEOs making stock dividends, sitting on their behinds.
Right.
You've got to figure out, and this value-added tax system does away with income tax. It does away with some sales tax. It's really a big sales tax.
Isn't the problem with a lot of this? I'm an advocate. If there was a 15% tax across the board tax, I think my burden would be reduced. And I happen to know a couple of guys who are pretty well off. One is a family member who told me he's worth a lot, and he told me, "Hell, I don't pay tax, but he'd actually be paying more tax." I think the problem is there'd be too many lawyers and accountants out of business, because if there was a flat tax of 15%, you wouldn't need those guys.
Yeah, but the flat tax they're talking isn't 15%; it's 23%.
Oh, really?
So start, when you start looking at it in that frame, 23% tax on a guy who's making, 20 grand a year, how much are you going to end up being able to spend? And for me,
right,
when you have that kind of a regressive tax, what does that mean to consumption? Now,
right,
we could talk about that, but at the end of the day, that kind of a massive tax, I think, would hurt the economy.
One last thing, too, as far as, you look at cuts, and at what point can we cut enough? I don't know what that is. At what point are people going to realize that we've done enough? They say, we got to trim the budget here, we got to trim the budget. Hey, after a while, you can't trim it anymore. If we don't have the revenue coming in from people paying taxes, and we're spending more than we got coming in, in the war or whatever, at what point are we going to say, you can't cut anything else? We got to come up with plan B. Or is this just going to be like a cancer where it's just malignant? It just goes on and on, and we keep cutting and cutting and cutting until oblivion.
Yeah, well, I've been saying we're living in the cancer age of capitalism. We're at the we're at the death of it because it's eating itself. And if you listen to Mike Terzai over here at the Capitol talking about core government functions, that's telling you that they've already cut as far as they can go. Now it's about destroying services.
Right. Yeah. When the house is on fire and some bad guys trying to climb in the window, then what? Right.
Well, you should have hired a private police and a private fire department.
It's a great time for socialism, if you ask me. All right, I'll let you guys go. Hey, thanks. Great show, Rick.
Thanks so much, Rick. And that's the thing. You keep hearing the Terzais of the world and these folks saying, oh, we need to talk about what are core government functions, you know, like police and fire and ambulance and military and the people who plow the roads and the people who make sure that you know, the streets are clean and the garbage is picked up and the 911 calls are answered and all of the other things that state workers do and government does.
Well, we talked about it. I mean, really, if you listen to this, some of these people closely, I mean, they want to go back to a time, the good old days, where we really didn't have that big a middle class. They want to go back to the good old days where, you know, people didn't have all these unnecessary jobs, according to them. I don't know what's going to happen in this state, but you do have some real right-wingers in some key positions, and that's troubling.
Oh, I've been hearing some of the people going up to the Hill talking to the new legislators, these new folks who have gotten in, and they have not. And this is what bothers me. We've elected a bunch of people who have no idea how government works. And they've got some bizarre idea that all they have to do is say no and cut everything, and somehow things are going to work out. It's amazing to me. And it's going to be interesting to see how some of these ideologues, these tea twizzlers, how they move. Maybe they're going to be a one-term flash in the pan. It will be interesting to see. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. We are back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Until now, Charles and David Koch have kept their extensive political operation a secret from the media and us hoi polloi. Over the years, they have quietly funneled tens of millions of dollars from their industrial fortune into hundreds of right-wing front groups set up to advance their goal of establishing a corporate plutocracy in America. From behind their plush curtain, they've operated as the right-wing's Wizard of Oz, only Ozier. But now, the curtain is being pulled back, and there they are, buck naked and butt ugly, for all to see. What an unpleasant surprise it must have been for the billionaire brothers to find the hoi polloi peering at them on January 30th. They were sequestered behind the gated walls of a Southern California resort with 200 other wealthy elites. All had come to this lair of luxury for a closed-door, four-day political retreat that Charles periodically organizes to plot strategy with his peers and get money commitments for the next national election. These clandestine powwows allow the Kochs and their corporate cohorts to huddle privately with top GOP Congress critters, Supreme Court justices, political operatives, and such right-wing celebrities as Glenn Beck. This year, however, the confidential letter of invitation from Koch Industries was leaked to researcher Lee Fong at the Center for American Progress and widely distributed. In it, Charles bragged that, quote, "We will assemble an exceptional group of leaders at Rancho Las Palmas Resort." And he did, but not the kind of leaders he intended to bring together. Instead, some 1,500 grassroots Americans gathered at the resort to greet the elites. They were not pleased to see us, but hey, we're not pleased to see them undermining our people's democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, these uninvited guests, accompanied by national media and hordes of bloggers, succeeded in uncloaking the Kochs. And now, the Koch name is a four-letter word, as in, to Koch democracy.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit Hightower Lowdown.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda, The Rick Smith Show.
Quality is in play. Workers should organize without haste.
got to be honest, it would have been nice had they passed the Employee Free Choice Act so that people have the right to join a union, to collective bargaining. You know, I look at this story of the Church of Scientology, according to Daniel Trenser. He says the FBI is investigating the Church of Scientology over allegations its practices may have violated human trafficking laws, according to a profile of filmmaker and former Scientologist Paul Haggis. In the New Yorker, the FBI is running an ongoing investigation into claims the church pays some of its workers as little as $50 per week, forces children into billion-year contracts, and sometimes uses physical force to keep church members from escaping Scientology compounds. The allegations center around SEA.org, S-E-A-org, a religious order inside the church whose 6,000 members are used by the church as labor, to maintain their properties. It's kind of like their labor force that they've basically, according to this, have pretty much kidnapped. And in 2009 expose, the St. Petersburg Times reported on former church spokesperson Mike Ridner, who alleged Church of Scientology leader David Misgivi beat him on numerous occasions, and that violence was generally encouraged as a means of maintaining church law. Sounds like a good Christian church, actually. Lots of beatings in the Christian churches, I remember. But, you know, you look at this, and I've always thought that, you know, this whole Scientology thing was kind of kooky to begin with. But this idea that children have to sign a billion-year labor contract kind of makes you wonder. Kind of makes you wonder a couple of things. One, what kind of kooky parents would put their kids in that situation? And two, you know, I got to be honest, why would you stay? This guy Haggis, you know, he wrote a couple of movies, Million Dollar Baby being one of them, and he directed one called Crash. He left the church in 2008 after it voiced support for Proposition 8, banning gay marriage in the state. Wow. And you got guys like Mike Lee in Utah who want to ban child labor laws, who think it's unconstitutional to have federal child labor laws, federal minimum wage laws, federal overtime laws. He thinks all of that's unconstitutional and should be left to the states. And I got to be honest with you folks, not so thrilled with that. But, you know, kind of interesting. Tell me about Boeing. What's going on with the Boeing deal?
Yes, we've been talking about this refueling bid that the Air Force has had for the last several years. I can remember going back at least 2, maybe 3 years. And what's at stake here is an awful lot of jobs. You have the American giant in the industry, Boeing, and they are going up against a European consortium, Airbus, that's made up of several giant European contractors. February 11th is the last date that Boeing can submit its proposals. It met last week with some of the Air Force people to talk over some of the ideas. And this is coming down to the nitty-gritty. Correspondingly, Airbus has filed a complaint against the United States with the WTO, the World Trade Organization. They allege that the U.S. government has subsidized Boeing to a great extent. But based on news reports, the ruling confirmed what has been known for a long time now, that Boeing has received, what Boeing has received from the U.S. government is really a pittance compared to Airbus's $20 billion in illegal subsidies, which is enough money for Airbus to develop nearly its entire lineup of commercial airlines. These illegal subsidies have distorted competition in the aerospace industry for decades, and they have literally eliminated tens of thousands of good-paying U.S. jobs. These subsidies are tipping the scales unfairly in the Air Force tanker contest as the competitor's airplane, the A330, has received more than $5 billion in illegal subsidies from the European government, while Boeing has paid 100% of the development of their 767 aircraft themselves. At the end of the day, Rick, we're talking about 40,000. If Boeing gets this contract, Boeing will be creating about 40,000 jobs in 35 different states, most of them good-paying, family-sustaining union jobs. If Airbus gets it, however, you're only talking about 400 or 500 jobs, and from what I understand, they were relatively moderate-paying, low-scale jobs in Alabama. So there's a lot riding here. Hopefully, for the sake of the American economy, Boeing will finally get it. Something interesting coming out of your home state, Rick. A freshman senator by the name of Jim Renacki, freshman Republican. And he had his first town meeting, and reportedly there were about 250 people there. And he's repeating this old canard that I ran into, in 2008 during the presidential campaign. I remember some of our retirees from our union, Rick. They were afraid that, you know, they were going to lose some of the benefits under Medicare. And he had this town meeting and kept repeating this canard that the health care reform bill was going to take about $500 billion out of Medicare. That's not true. What it will do, it will slow the growth over the next 10 years of Medicare and save about $500 billion. So this old canard of scaring the elderly and turning them against the health care reform is still going on. Too bad it's untrue. We talked about adult basic. For those of you who really want to get involved and you want to call Corbett's office, I'll give you the number quick here. 717-787-2500. That's 717-787-2500. And please tell Governor Corbett, to save the adult basic. That's what I got, Rick.
I just got an email, and man, couldn't have ruined my day anymore. Somebody sent me a screenshot from our Ustream video, because if you want to watch us here in the studio, we do that at thericksmithshow.com. But you can also see it through the Ustream, because that's the server that we use, or the that we use to put the video out. There's an ad for Newt Gingrich right next to our video. So that kind of ruined my day.
You mean the Hummelstein kid?
Little Nudie.
Yes.
Mr. I'm going to hand my dying wife divorce papers on her deathbed so I can run off with my little Twinkie.
Now.
But I'm going to preach family values. You know, you got to love that level of hypocrisy. And I got to be honest. I look to him with awe. I look to somebody with, like Limbaugh, with awe, that they can wake up in the morning, look themselves in the face and say, you know, I'm going to still preach the whole right-wing agenda, the whole family values, you know, that whole agenda. You know, especially Limbaugh with his little drug habit. Hmm. Yeah, but you know what's interesting? You have not heard him say much about people with drug addiction since.
No, he hasn't. Now he's on national TV, and God knows who to be interested.
He's on national TV?
He's taking golf lessons from the same pro who gives,
I care about that.
Well, yeah, gives the top golfer. Who am I thinking of here? The guy just...
Tiger Woods.
Well, that's Tiger Woods.
Good. I mean, you know, you got to rush at
exact
three,
same
three,
man,
three,
believe
three
it
failed,
or not.
Three failed marriages. And,
so, you know. I guess people are interested in how, and he's a hacker. I saw him play. He's a hacker like you and I. And there he is, getting lessons from one of the best in the country.
At the end of it, for me, it's about having a good time, going out and a little bit of relaxation and challenging myself to do a little bit better.
Mm-hmm, that is true. Well, you know, you talked about Newt Gingrich and you talked about Rush Limbaugh. I mean, those people just have used kahunas. I mean, really. They just, wow.
You got to give them credit. You got to give credit where credit is due.
I guess you're not really in the Republican Party until you've had a couple good divorces.
Anyway, today in labor history, back in 1934, Teamster truck drivers in Minneapolis went on strike, shutting down fuel deliveries The short walkout set the stage for the main conflict the following summer between the union and the employers, represented by the Citizens Alliance. You know, you go back and you look at some of these labor struggles, and you know, I'm someone who likes to look back and look at labor history, especially to see how we got here. You know, how did you grow a middle class? The folks in the 30s and 40s, they struggled to make it. They fought hard to get the advancements that we kind of take for granted now. You know, workman's compensation, good luck on that one back in the 30s. You know, a lot of this stuff, you know, prevailing wage laws, minimum wage, maximum hour laws, none of that stuff existed. You went to work for a company and you basically worked sun up to sun down or until you were told you could go home. So it was a different work environment. It's the kind of work environment that I do believe corporate America wants us to go back to. They want you desperate enough. They want, and they're doing a pretty good job creating a desperation class. But they want you desperate enough to where you have to work from sun up to sun down. Now they give you those cute little plastic things that go in your wallet. And you know, basically the whole company store idea, if you really stop and think about it. Only you're not indebted to the company, you're indebted to somebody else, another company, which is even better yet. So I'm really amazed at how we have come almost full circle in this, you know, this indebtedness. You know, I go back and I remember a guy I worked with about 10, 15 years ago. He told me that when he came back from Vietnam, he had gotten a little bit of money when he got out of the service, and he went home to the company town there, and he paid his father's debt. And that was the first time in generations that the family was not in debt to the company store. That is amazing. And you look at this debt, and you know, I joked earlier that credit card spending is up for the third month in a row, so the recession must be over because we're spending again. But think about who we're indebted to. Think about that. We're going to take a quick break. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We are right back after this. This is the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Morgan, Executive Director of CAIU, on the decision to switch to Capital Blue Cross Health Insurance.
By moving to Capital Blue Cross, we were able to achieve savings that we had never expected. We're getting quality care and tremendous customer service. As both a consumer of health care and as the director of this agency, I couldn't be happier that we switched to Capital Blue Cross.
To learn more, call 1-800-976-2242 or visit capbluecross.com. Capital Blue Cross, independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association.
David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at therickssmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go there to download our podcast, or you can watch the video right there at our website. Also, if you want to contact me, you can email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do appreciate all the emails, especially when folks point out stuff like Newt Gingrich's face right next to mine. Not happy about this, but here again, they know where the progressives are. It's just their little bit of assault. It's just their little way of sneaking into our world, I guess. So here's what you do. The next time you see Newt's face on a page where we're at, click on it and then exit out and go back and click on it again. Hopefully, the more you click on it, the more he has to pay for that. Because I'm told it's like $1.50, $2 every time you click on it. So, you know, hey, generate a little revenue for folks. I don't know if you saw this article over the weekend, Jake, but it's talking about healthcare fraud. And, you know, when someone robs a bank, you hear about that. It's plastered all over the 6 o'clock news, and they may have gotten away with $50 and a pack of blue gum or something. But it makes front page news. Oh, somebody robbed the bank. I know when the bozos went over to the Giant there on the other side of Harrisburg, everybody was all up in arms. And the guy probably got away with $50 or something. I do believe they did catch him, though. Made front page news. Front page news. But when somebody commits fraud against the Medicare system, like Florida Governor Rick Perry's company, who end up paying $1.7 billion in fines, I'm told 14 felonies they were convicted of. They didn't go to jail, mind you, but they did pay a couple of pennies. Okay, we got cut. Here's some money. We'll pay. I know we're corporate citizens, you know, corporate people. Here's some money. But they're saying that Medicare and Medicaid scams cost us, the taxpayers, more than $60 billion every year. But again, as this article points out, bank holdups get a lot more attention. They're trying to catch, you know, they're rolling out this new plan of you know, the top 10 criminals, you know, America's Most Wanted. We have this TV show with John Walsh, who's out there. We got to catch these criminals. I've always wondered why we didn't have Corporate Criminal Watch. Now, there's a website, Corporate Criminal Watch, and they do a nice job. But why don't we have that on TV where you see people like Scott, you know, marched out in front of the camera and go, here's a guy ripped off, you know, $1.7 billion of your tax dollars. Why don't we do that? This article points out a couple of people who were bilking the system. You know, one guy was ordering those scooters, chairs, $1 million of motorized wheelchairs that nobody really needed. In fact, he got one for a blind guy who, I don't even know how to read the instructions. But, you know, he got away with about $7,000 apiece, and they talk about another person who was running a nursing home who was claiming that, you know, they were doing services that they weren't. They got $17 million. Another guy had done a whole bunch of scams around HIV drugs. So there's these people out there who are scamming the system. And, you know, the people who were saying that they were buying HIV drugs ran up $119 million in fraud. They bought hotels and helicopters and boats. Must be nice. And I go back to because my wife used to do medical billing. She managed a medical billing office for a while before we got married. And she got out for the very reason that they are draconian in the way that they investigate this stuff. So it's for me, you know, I look at this, these people are getting away with all this fraud, and it's amazing, because she was as paranoid as can be. So I guess it's one of those scenarios, again, the people who are going to defraud the system, they're going to do no matter what the penalties are. We just need more enforcement. And I think about a guy I used to know who was a doctor. And amazing, one of these really just bizarre guys. He was committing Medicare fraud. He was claiming he was going to people's homes and doing at-home visits and charging Medicare for doing these visits that he never did. And the dummy was, you know, he was billing these at-home visits at the same time he was doing in-office visits. So eventually they caught him. And for him, he ended up doing like 3 or 4 years in jail. They took his medical license away. It basically ruined him. And I say, you know, good. What he told me, I'm good for you. You got what you deserved. So again, you know, when you look at these systems, I'm not against folks getting what they need, but when you see these people who are really just stealing from the system, these are folks who need to go to jail. And I point to Rick Scott, a CEO of a company who, they got busted. $1.7 billion they had to pay back. Yet nobody went to jail. There's something seriously wrong with this. Yet, you know, hey, if someone robs a bank, good luck. You're gone for a long time. But this kind of crime, it's white collar. Nobody got hurt. Come on, nobody got hurt in this, did they? Of course they got hurt. And I point to places like Arizona, where Governor Jan Brewer said, you know what, we're not going to pay for implants anymore because we don't have the money. You go back to this $119 million that they defrauded Medicare out of. Could that money not have been used to maybe pay that $1.4 million shortfall to make sure that those people got transplants? I think of that girl in California who the insurance company refused.